Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Christian Sager.
Yeah, all right, everybody. You asked for it, so you got it. Everyone seemed to really dig our creepypasta episode that we did a few months back.
We did it back in October doing our slew of Halloween-themed science-y episodes.
That's right, yeah.
And so if you haven't listened to that one yet, I recommend you go back and listen to it. But the basic premise was if creepypastas are short horror stories that are kind of memes written for the internet or just based on images for the internet, right?
Yeah.
And we took, I think, three of them that were very science-y oriented. It turns out a couple of these things are basically like such and such thing happens in a mad laboratory, chaos ensues,
yeah,
right?
Crazy experiment gets out of hand, people pull their skin off, people can't sleep, that sort of thing. Yeah. And we used it as a springboard to talk about actual science that, not so much the science behind the creepypasta, but the science that can stem. If you follow the tracks of the science from the creepypasta,
yeah,
then you can get to some really cool studies and whatnot.
Yeah, so we took a look at three of them, and then there was a really positive response to that episode.
Yeah.
So we have been recommended over, actually this is a good opportunity to plug the ways to contact us. People have contacted us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Tumblr, and then have emailed us directly asking us, hey, do more creepypastas. And specifically, they wanted us to cover something called Jeff the Killer. And I was totally unfamiliar with this until it was sent to us. I gotta be honest, it's not exactly, my favorite of the creepypastas I've read, but I can see why it's compelling, especially it's largely based off of just like a single image that looks like a photoshopped kind of creepy Joker thing.
Yeah. And the image itself, I was sort of following the leads there, like, where did it come from? And it's one of these things where, you know, somebody on some message board manipulated an image, someone else manipulated it, and then there's some creepy tales about what the underlying image was. So some of that is kind of compelling in the sort of weird, creepy pasta, where did it come from?
Let's touch on that just a little bit further. So, Annalene Newitz over at IO9 has an article, that is basically like the expose of potentially where the image came from. And apparently some folks over at 4chan did some like detective work.
Right.
And they found out that the image that Jeff the Killer is based on is a photoshopped image of a girl who was being bullied, Was she being bullied on the internet or in real life?
Allegedly, anyway. Okay. I don't know to what extent that all
and killed herself due to the bullying. This is again another story. There's been no evidence to bring this up other than that there seems to be some connection. And they brought up the photo and yeah, it does. It looks like it's the original photo that this was photoshopped of.
Yeah. So even the origin story of this image, this manipulated image, is kind of goes into like the creepier, darker side of the internet, which I think adds to its appeal.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily true or not. I'm like pretty sure Jeff the Killer itself is not true.
No.
And we are not going to, if you want to read it, you know, stop the podcast, Google Jeff the Killer. It's on the Creepypasta site. But the gist, you want me to just throw the summary out there right now?
I do want to mention though that this is one that, like, some of the creepypastas out there, it's gotten to the point where authors will step forward or authors are saying, I wrote this from the very beginning. This is one that does not seem to have an attributed author. If I'm wrong on that, let us know, and we will give proper credit where it's due. But this one seems to – this is an older one. It seems to just – there are different versions of it. Most of them are not the most well-crafted bits of fiction.
Yeah, as with most creepypastas, the idea, I think, is interesting, with the prose execution kind of falls apart a little bit. And I think that's part of the appeal, right?
Because it's like, this is something, it must be true, it's written so poorly.
Right,
you know?
Right. It's this like the Wikipedia of horror stories. Yeah. Yeah, it feels like it was written by five or six different people who've come in and kind of punched up certain sections or dropped
and
out.
And that is kind of the magic of the true creepypasta.
Right.
It shouldn't read like, a beginning horror writer is just dumping his old drafts on the internet.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, this is the premise of Jeff the Killer. So there's this character named Jeff.
Okay.
And he's a teenager and he, is like subject to bullying. He and his brother, there's some implication in the version that I read that there's like a switch that goes off in his brain that kind of like unleashes his dark primal side or something like that during this bullying. There are multiple incidents in which like he confronts the bullies and basically beats the living hell out of them. And then they show up at like a party or something. There's another incident where they hold him at gunpoint in front of like his parents and other people, and basically torture him, and it causes his face to be burned. And so following this, he goes insane and Joker style from The Dark Knight cuts a smile into his cheeks. So he has a permanent smile and then he burns off his own eyelids so that he can always see this smile. And then he subsequently, you know, this is the like origin story myth of a serial killer who goes from house to house. And before he kills his victims, he says, go to sleep.
I should also add no relation to Killer Mike.
Yeah, none that I know of. Though Jeff the Killer is a supporter of Bernie Sanders, it turns out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The funny thing is that, so the story sort of starts off as like from the perspective of somebody who's about to be killed by Jeff the Killer. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of flings backwards and reveals the origin of Jeff the Killer. So you're probably listening to this and going, well, where's the science?
Yeah.
Here,
what
guys?
Would possibly be about? To
yeah.
Discuss?
Those of you out there who are like, these guys have gone a little bit over the deep end with the monster horror stuff. We actually did a little bit of digging, and it turns out not Jeff the Killer wise, but there's three topics that we want to touch on here. One, people giving themselves permanent smiles and the science of fake smiling and how our minds react to it. Two, the idea of eyelid replacement surgery, which is apparently much bigger of a thing than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rather complex procedure and an important one in terms of reconstructive plastic surgery.
And then the third one is there is a strong reality of acid attacks out there. And it's largely common in countries, like Afghanistan, Cambodia, I believe Pakistan and Bangladesh. All of these countries have like pretty high incidence, and I was shocked to find out how often this happens. So we'll touch on that briefly.
Yeah. And that's going to be, you know, some dark, real life stuff there at the end.
Yeah.
But I encourage you to stick with it. We actually had a discussion about whether we should actually discuss that. Like, is it right to start a podcast off with something kind of light and stupid and end up in a dark and serious place? But I think so. I think it's a topic that's worth, if you're not familiar with it, it's worth becoming familiar with this topic.
Yeah.
And this is probably one of the better opportunities for us to discuss it, because it's not the kind of thing that we would do an entire episode on for this show.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was familiar that this was a thing that happened occasionally, like that I would hear about in the news. But when we did the research for this episode, I was shocked to find out how frequent it is. And, I think it deserves, you know, some time on this episode and for people to learn a little bit more about it. I'm glad that I learned a little bit more about it doing the research. So let's start off with the smiling thing. Okay. So this is a recurring motif in our fiction, the idea of a sort of creepy smile, right?
Yeah.
It comes up over and over again. Obviously, the thing most people think about is the Joker, for the Batman villain, the Joker.
Right. Which varying depictions, either like the Dark Knight, he has the Glasgow smile.
Yeah.
The Glasgow grin where it's been cut in. Other times he has a frozen grin. He's wearing a face recently. I haven't really been keeping up.
Yeah. I think I haven't read that storyline either, but my understanding is, he had his own face cut off and then sewed it back on in a smile. But then I think they've already retconned that. So he's like, that was just like for a year or two or something. They basically wanted to like up the gross out horror factor with the Joker. And I think they've scaled back from that probably because they have that Suicide Squad movie coming out later this summer with Jared Leto.
Oh yeah.
As the like punk rock, Kid Rock version of the Joker.
Yeah, and the creepy fake smile, we encounter that throughout our myth cycles. One of the ones that I really have been impressed with, and this is a recent phenomenon dating back to around 1979 in Japan's Nagasaki prefecture. This is the urban legend of the slit-mouthed woman, or Kuchisaki Onna. And basically the urban legend is that this woman was mutilated by her husband. He like slits the corners of her mouth.
Mm.
So she has this slit face, and, her ghost wanders around, comes up to people and asks, "Do you think I'm beautiful?"
Right.
And there's apparently like a whole program of how you respond.
Huh.
Like if you say yes, she'll kill you one way. If you say no, she'll kill you another or mutilate you.
Lovely.
But, you know, it's very well versed in this sort of grotesque fake smile.
Yeah. Yeah. So this seems to have particular resonance in Asian cultures. So there's that myth. I think of Ichi the Killer, that Takashi Miike movie, which I guess is probably part of the inspiration for where that Christopher Nolan Joker came from, the idea of the Glasgow. We should probably explain what a Glasgow smile is.
This is the idea that street gangs in Glasgow would slice your face, give you a fake grin.
It was sort of like their way to mark you.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. I think his name's Tommy Flanagan.
Oh, yeah.
I looked it up yesterday.
From Sons of Anarchy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He actually has, like, somebody did that to him. I had no idea.
He was, I think, a DJ back in the day. And he was assaulted leaving a club.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so that's a real thing. But, yeah, Ichi the Killer. And then we're going to find, as we're talking about it, that, like, there's a big plastic surgery movement in South Korea that's connected to this sort of enhanced fake smile as well.
Yeah. And of course, if you want to see a fake smile, you don't have to turn to ghost stories and other cultures, because they're everywhere, right?
Yep.
The politician, the car salesman.
Me.
Yeah.
I try my best in, I guess, our Stuff to Blow Your Mind promotional photos, but I'm terrible. I'm one of those people that's just terrible at smiling in photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife teases me about it all the time, that I'm like, that I look even creepier when I'm trying to smile. And it's that thing where I'm smiling with my mouth, but not with my eyes.
Yeah, it's because the smile, as it turns out, is far more complex than just that fake smile. And we can tell when somebody's fake smiling, and it gets complicated. It basically comes down, the way I always think about facial expressions is your face is a communication array.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about voice. It's not just about body movements. It's about you know, where your eyes are looking, what your, what all the expressions and microexpressions, how they're coming together to communicate with another, facial communication array.
Yeah. In nonverbal communication studies, outside of just body language, like the broad study of body language, facial communication is huge, and it adds a ton to how we communicate with one another outside of, you know, our verbal communications, right? Like, think about when you're talking on the phone.
Right.
It's much more limited compared to when you're talking to someone face to face and you can actually see the different ways they're communicating. I'm like waving at my face right now as I'm talking to Robert.
Yeah. And of course, these are the problems inherent in
podcasting
email
as well.
Both podcasting and email communication,
yeah,
especially.
Yeah.
So essentially, though, there are two types of smiles then.
Yeah.
You can think of them as the fake and the genuine smile. So first you have the Duchenne smile, and this is named for French physician, Guillaume Duchenne, who in 1862 conducted a slew of experiments, essentially electrocuting people's facial muscles into outrageous grins.
See, like, we didn't really have to go too far from Jeff the Killer through science to get to something just as creepy.
Yeah.
Electrocuting people's faces into smiles.
Yeah, science is inherently weird. So, in these cases, the electrical current activates contractions in two muscles, the voluntary zygomatic major, which raises the corners of the mouth, and the involuntary orbicularis oculi, which raises the cheeks and spreads crow's feet across around the eyes.
And that's really, that's the part that generates the idea of the real smile, right? The crow's feet and the cheeks raising up. There has also been research done that patients with damage to their motor cortex in their brain's left hemisphere, they can only smile asymmetrically with the right side not moving the way it should. And here's the trick though. If they laugh spontaneously, they smile normally. They'll do one of the Duchenne, smiles without asymmetry. So, likewise, when a patient with damage to their anterior cingulate, which is the part of the limbic system, in your brain, when they try to smile, there's no asymmetry. It's symmetrical. This whole thing leads to the hypothesis that the fake smile, what is sometimes referred to as the say cheese smile, is controlled by the motor cortex, where the Duchenne smile is actually controlled by the limbic system, which is the actual emotional center of the brain. So it's two different parts of the brain interacting. And not only does our brain generate the smiles differently, but it responds to other people's versions of these smiles differently.
But of course this, so essentially we've outlined here that there is the genuine smile, there's the fake smile,
yeah.
But of course, can we tell the difference?
Yeah.
Are creepy smiles creepy because we can see through the con? Well, a 2013 study from the University of La Laguna, Spain, investigated, and they found that on first glance, test subjects had a very hard time recognizing that fake smile, which surprised me because there are fake smiles out there that you look at, and maybe it's more a matter of projecting on that person, like, this politician is smiling, it must be fake.
That's funny that you said politician, because that's where I immediately go to as well. Yeah, the dead smile of certain politicians.
Yeah.
There's another study that was done out of Northeastern University in Boston that found that two-thirds of individuals can fake a Duchenne smile well in a way that people can't distinguish. They can't tell whether they're fake smiling or real smiling. I'm not one of those two thirds. I'm the one third that can't do it. Cause whenever I do it, it looks like, you know, I'm dead inside. Like I look like Jeff the Killer.
Yeah. Well, then there's also this, I feel like there's this feeling just in our daily interactions. Not me and you, but just everyone in general,
right,
is that fake smiles are kind of, expected. Fake smiles and fake laughter. So sometimes you're chatting with somebody and they're, they're laughing, they're smiling. And on some level, I know that this interaction is either maybe not completely fake, but at least punched up.
Yeah.
And it feels okay because I expect that.
Yeah, it is sort of the motions of everyday, like, human beings just trying to get along, right?
Yeah.
And then there's sometimes, maybe this says something more about me, like the audience is going to learn today that I can't actually fake a smile and that I get irritated by people who do fake smiles. But like, I'll be sitting there and overhearing kind of those, you know, those conversations where I know one person is angry at the other person, but they're faking their way through it. They're smiling. They're doing the kind of fake laughter to just kind of make their way through the conversation and get away from conflict, right? Avoid conflict. That drives me crazy. I'm conflict oriented, I guess, but yeah, it is, it's every day. It's every day for human beings. And there's tons of studies into this. Like when we dove into this, I thought, oh, well, the Jeff the Killer smile thing. Sure. There's going to be a little bit of research into the fake smiles, but it was like a sea of research. Yeah. I think we only scraped the top of it here.
Yeah. Now to return to that Spanish study that I was mentioning just a second ago, they found that the longer they looked at the individual, the longer one person looked at the other person, taking in all the details of the expression, the more they saw through the ruse. However, in 40% of the cases, test subjects ultimately classified ambiguous smiles as happy since their eyes were drawn more to the smile than to the eyes.
That probably has something to do, I would imagine, with these were both done in Western societies. There's an aversion to looking at people's eyes too long in Western culture in facial communication as well. I used to talk about this with my students when I was teaching communication classes, that like if you obviously you're expected to maintain eye contact for a certain amount of time so that you can convey your interest, right? But if you just stare directly into a person's eyes while you're communicating and don't unlock, it becomes very uncomfortable pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that has something to do with it as well. But also like the crow's feet thing, right? Like that's a detail that becomes more obvious the longer that you're staring at somebody too.
Yeah.
So maybe.
I did not stop staring at you this whole time.
Yeah, he didn't. He kept committed to the bit, and I was the only one who got to stick to it.
I find myself in certain situations, I feel like I'm playing a game of like staring chicken with someone, and I'll become super conscious. Am I staring too long? Should I be breaking my eyes away? Yeah. How uncomfortable am I? And then sometimes I think, should I just keep staring to win?
Well, there's something more to that as well that we'll talk about in a second. But the whole thing is super confusing to our brains too, right? Like think about our poor brains. Like it's trying to process generating these smells, but then it's trying to also process, like interpreting whether these smells are genuine or not, right? And a UCLA scientist named Marco Iacoboni, I believe is how it's pronounced. He noted that our brains are actually, wired for sociability. That makes sense. We're social animals. And if we observe another person's smile, it mirrors the neurons in that person's brain, they will light up in our own brains as if we are smiling ourselves, right? So there's that idea too that like the smile is contagious, and then which we're going to talk about as well today, that the smile itself, whether it's genuine or not, generates happiness.
Yeah. So the issue is not as cut and dry. Now that being said, if the smile, fake smile, is cut into the person's face, you're probably going to catch on.
That's
probably,
your brain will probably figure that one out.
For the rest of us though, if dealing with just normal fake smiles, you were probably wondering, how can you consciously detect one? Well, we already mentioned that it's a little problematic, but according to body language expert Nicholas Fradet, you look at the crow's feet.
Okay.
Look for their bottom teeth. If you can't see them, it might be a fake smile.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Like, I guess when I think of like really emphasizing the fake smile to the point of like making it creepy on purpose, that's when you really bite down on the teeth and demonstrate your lower teeth. I could see that. But then like you've got to keep those eyes dead, no crow's feet. I wonder if people who naturally through aging or whatever just have more crow's feet are better at the faking thing.
I don't know.
That would be interesting.
I'm sure there's a study somewhere that we missed on that.
Yeah, maybe.
So yeah, basically the involuntary movements of the orbicularis oculi are key here. This can cause the eyes to close while fake smilers often keep their upper face very still. And if that doesn't work, MIT's media lab has developed an algorithm that allows machines to pinpoint fake happiness and frustration as well.
Wow.
Which leads to a whole bunch of, potential applications in our cybernetic future, right? You can have some sort of app in your eyeball or your glasses that can cue you in to fake expressions.
It shows like the RoboCop display, like it shows a person's face and then like a little thing comes up and it's like, this person is faking. Well, let's get into the faking part.
Yes.
There's some actual science to the fake it till you make it, idea of making yourself happy.
Yeah. A 2012 study from the University of Kansas studied how smiling influences our recovery from stressful activities, and they found that a genuine smile resulted in faster recovery time and a more relaxed state. But even a fake smile can force your emotional state to follow suit.
Yeah, I think this is the same study. I read a couple different studies, but I think this is the one you're talking about. The title is Grin and Bear It, The Influence of Manipulated Positive Facial Expression on the Stress Response, mm-hmm. which is a pretty hilarious title by Tara Kraft and Sarah Pressman. And is this the one where they use chopsticks?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So they use chopsticks to manipulate the facial muscles of 169 different participants. And from my understanding, they did it in a couple different ways. I didn't get to see any like images. I'm assuming they must have taken pictures or video or something that went along with this, but some of them, they bit down on the chopsticks. Others, they like put the chopsticks in their mouths horizontally. So it was pushing, their cheeks up, I think. Mm-hmm. But the general idea here was that they had three different positions that they put their faces in. There's the neutral expression, a standard smile, and the Duchenne smile. And then they subjected them, well, they've got these chopsticks in their face, they subjected them to stress-inducing multitasking activities. And obviously this is more difficult when you've got chopsticks shoved in your mouth.
Yeah.
And the results were basically that those who were instructed to smile recovered from the stressful activity with a lower heart rate than those with the neutral expressions. So the Duchenne smile is the one that makes you the most relaxed. That's kind of weird. Regardless of how you're actually feeling, it'll generate that relaxing feeling in you. And so there's lots of other studies that seem to indicate that the just smiling thing can produce a happy feeling. And from our own home-based site, howstuffworks.com, there's a article about the smiling happiness thing. It says that in 1989, Robert Zajonc, I believe, I don't know how to pronounce that name, Z-A-J-O-N-C.
Zajonc?
Zajonc. Sounds Eastern European to me. So sorry, Robert. but he published a study where he had his subjects repeat vowel sounds over and over again, forcing their faces into various expressions. This is kind of like, I guess, like isometric exercises. Mm-hmm. And so to mimic a smile, they made an E sound to stretch the corners of their mouth outward. Then they also tested a long U sound, which is kind of like, I guess, U, which forced the mouth into a pout. And then they reported their feelings after this. And of course, after doing the E for a long time, they felt good. And after doing the U sound for a long time, they felt bad. Now, his research proposes that there's a physiological connection going on here between the facial changes and the brain activities that are associated with happiness. And he goes deep here. He says, the internal carotid artery, this is the pipe that's kind of like above your mouth. It delivers the majority of blood to the human brain. Mm-hmm. It flows through an opening in our heads called the cavernous sinus. And this contains a lot of our facial veins, right? So the idea is that when we're smiling, those veins are constricted and that cuts down on the flow of blood to our brain. And this makes the temperature in our brain drop, the blood of, or at least the blood drop. The idea here is that the cooler your brain is, the better your emotions are going to be. They're going to be good emotions, according to research. Whereas a warmer brain produces negative emotions.
Interesting.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. So, his theory was basically that the reverse is also true, that when your muscles are frowning, that increases the blood flow, which makes your brain warmer, which makes it more difficult to be happy. Which is interesting. I guess I think about like the temperature differences of various areas of the world where people live. There must be some kind of studies on like whether people who live in the Arctic, for instance, are more likely to be happy than, I guess, like people who live near the equator.
Yeah, but I don't know to what extent they look to this area that we're discussing here, which is essentially the temperature constraints on like the physical mechanisms of facial happiness.
I believe that's the same mechanism that causes brain freeze too. Like when you're having like ice cream or a popsicle or something like that. I think that, we've done research on this for an episode of Brain Stuff, the video show that Joe and I write on. And I believe that artery is what causes brain freeze. Is that like at least I think that is.
You know, when you say that you and Joe have done research on this, I'm imagining you guys going out for
the
ice cream.
The two of us just eating ice cream until it hurts so much and then like putting our heads in MRI machines. If only. But so it gets even crazier. Okay, so we've got chopsticks shoved in the face. We're talking about ice cream, right? What about Botox injections?
Oh, yeah.
So if you inject Botox into your face, there's been research that shows that it dampens your emotional responses, specifically the ones that paralyze the small wrinkle-causing muscles around the eyes, the crow's feet.
Yeah, because you are interfering with the physical communication of emotion. Yeah. But in this weird sense, it's also affecting how you feel. Like we tend to think like, here's the puppet master and here's the puppet.
Yeah.
And we think that everything that's going on with the puppet master is authentic and everything on the outside is just its shadow, its expression. But it's like the mind body connection. Everything is hooked together. Everything's connected here.
Yeah, definitely. To the point that it not only reduces your happiness, it also reduces your depression as well. Mm-hmm. So basically what they did was they showed, people who had Botox injections, quote, happy videos. So I'm imagining this is like cats or something like
baby
that.
Baby sloths.
Yeah. And they recorded their emotional response to these things. And they found that, yeah, both their depression rate and their happiness rate were lowered. The effects were minor, though. So I don't want to like paint the idea here that people turn into like emotionless robots when they get Botox injections. But they also did a study on the Botox thing at the University of Cardiff, and they found that the people with smile injections, so this is different from the crow's feet injections, mm-hmm. They're happier on average than people who can frown without Botox. Scientists at the Technical University of Munich also found that when they scanned Botox recipients with fMRI machines, while those people were mimicking angry faces, they found that they had much lower activity in their brain circuits involved with emotional processing than those people who had not received Botox treatment. So it is possible that maybe we would feel less pain if we weren't physically able to express it. So that's kind of an interesting turn of events on the whole Botox thing.
Yeah, yeah. You think it goes one way and then it flips the other here.
And then we should, of course, mention that all of this goes back to like the granddaddy who postulated a lot of this was Charles Darwin. Mm-hmm. And he proposed way back in 1872 that facial expressions don't just reflect emotions, but they cause them as well. And he actually is quoted as saying, the free expression by outward signs of an emotion intensifies it. And he observed this in babies. And he said that babies that are born blind smile the same as babies that are sighted. And the reason why he thought was because at 5 weeks old, babies start learning to smile. And the reason why is that we learn that crying gets the attention of an adult, but smiling keeps them there. So whether you can see or not, you're able to realize that has some kind of a cause and effect. All right. One more thing. I briefly mentioned this. So there's a connection between people who fight and sort of like dominance in men specifically, uh-huh, and smiling as well. Research has been done that shows that fighters who smile authentically at another fighter before a match are more likely to lose that match.
Interesting.
And it's somehow linked. Smiling is somehow linked to testosterone. Like our thought of how much testosterone you have is linked to how authentic you're smiling. And so I gotta wonder, like, what does that do to the whole fake smile system, right? Does it indicate strength then or not? Smiling also can sometimes indicate dominance, right? Like if you're in a position of power, you may be smiling authentically at the other person because you can, right?
Yeah. Like I'm instantly thinking of, say, Brock Lesnar smiling. And if it's a fake smile or a real smile, either one is terrifying if, yeah, I'm in the wrong scenario with Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. They even found that chimps have two different kinds of smiles. They have a submission face. So this is maybe a more interesting way for us to think about our smiles. Mm-hmm. The submission face where their lips are retracted and their lips are exposed. So this is sort of like the equivalent of a dog like laying down on its back, right?
Right.
Exposing its belly. And they have a play face where their lower jaw is dropped and the corners of their mouth are pulled back. But so they have a whole dominance thing going on as well with their smiles. So it's interesting. You bring this all back to Jeff the Killer. If Jeff the Killer's smile is fake because he's cut it into his own face, then the fake smile won't necessarily, I guess that does necessarily indicate that he's more dominant, right?
Yeah.
Because the real smile would be submissive.
And maybe he's happier. I don't know.
He might be. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss some more smile science. We're going to discuss some reconstructive surgery, and eventually get to this episode's more dark real world conclusion. Hey, everybody, you know how it is. You've got to have a professional-looking website. That's just how we represent ourselves in this day and age. That's how you present yourself on the internet. The thing is, not all of us have a big fancy web designer to turn to. Not everybody has the coding skills they need to build something up from scratch, and that is where Squarespace comes in. Squarespace will give you the tools you need, an interface that makes sense, and you can use all of these elements to make the website that you've been looking for, and you don't have to relearn or reinvent coding to do it. Now, we want you to try this out for yourselves. Now is the time to build that website you've been dreaming of. So head on over to Squarespace and use our promo code MINDBLOWN to get 10% off your first purchase and a free domain name. So head on out there, build that website with Squarespace. All right, we're back. We're talking about Killer Jeff. I mean, we're sort of talking about Killer Jeff. We're talking about scientific topics that that stem from contemplation of this particular creepypasta.
Yeah, and we've hit a lot of the smile science. But of course, you know, some of you out there are wondering, is there any science behind carving a smile into your own face? Is there Joker science at play here?
Because most depictions of it are, it's pretty crude, right? It's the, and it's the horror of like, oh, facial mutilation, and this isn't a real smile at all. This is like the worst.
Right. I even think like I read like there's like one rumor that the photoshopped image of Jeff the Killer like uses like parts of a wolf's mouth. Or maybe it's just a dog, but
I saw that
in order to make the rictus look a little bit creepier. Mm-hmm. But, hey, turns out that lots of people are doing this, not like in their own bathroom with like a carving knife or anything, but there is a whole culture surrounding the plastic surgery of giving yourself a permanent smile.
Yeah, if this sounds familiar, it is because in August 2013, The Atlantic reported on a growing surgical trend in South Korea, Valentine Anguloplasty, also known as Valentine Mouth Rejuvenation or Corner of the Mouth Lift.
And so it's apparently called this because of the heart shape that it makes when the muscle tissues are removed at your lips' edges. If those of you out there, you know, like the Cupid's bow part of your mouth, that I know this just from like drawing classes and like learning anatomy and how to draw a mouth and stuff. Cupid's bow is sort of like the middle of your mouth, I guess. Like that area is sort of highlighted because of the removal of the areas at the edges of the lips. Each one of these procedures costs $2,000, which I don't know anything about plastic surgery, but to me, I was like, that's cheap.
I
don't know.
Yeah.
Is it cheap? I don't know. Maybe, well, maybe plastic surgery is less than I thought it was.
I don't think I would be able to really, is that Korean or?
I think that's the Korean procedure. Okay. Yeah.
See, I don't know. I can't really frame that in the reference of Korean surgical costs, but
yeah,
over here, I feel like that would be cheap.
Seems like it. Yeah. Okay. So this brings us back to that Glasgow smile we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, it's a little reminiscent of that, except, you know, go ahead and cast away any, you know, of the more grotesque ideas here, because, yeah, we are talking very slight, augmentation.
Yeah, this isn't Heath Ledger's Joker, like, how do you think I got these scars kind of thing? Like you can barely tell from the photos that I saw.
Yeah, now, of course, one of the things that came to mind when I was reading about it is that it's easy for these, when you have a report coming out of something that is supposedly a trend in a foreign country, sometimes things get a little blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
For instance, I always come back to the bagel head thing. This was where,
which we have an awesome post about on stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Yeah. It's a fun one, but this was in Japan where a few individuals, like a handful of people, have had silicone injected into their head and to make
the
forehead to make a bulge, just under the skin, and then they press their finger in it, and it kind of makes a bagel look.
Yeah.
And very few people have done this, but some of the initial reporting, granted not the Atlantic, but other places reported, oh, this is, everyone is doing this, as if all the teens in Japan are going out and having this procedure. So anytime I read about a surgical procedure in another country that is a trend, you know, I always sort of, put my warning lights on a little bit.
Yeah, and I do have to note, like, none of the pieces I read for this, I don't think they gave numbers on how mm-hmm. many people were getting this done. But they did say that it's very popular with people who work in customer service.
Yeah, like, you know, flight attendants, secretary. I mean, you can imagine any situation where that, that facial communication array interface with yeah. a client or a customer is vital.
And these are largely people in their 20s and 30s too.
I think
probably because they're in that customer service sector, they're being told like, you're not happy enough for the job or whatever. And so they get this procedure done so they can make a career out of it, I suppose.
Yeah. And of course, it's a horrible thing to be told, I'm sorry, you're not happy enough for this job. Ugh, but,
it's the worst. Like I kept thinking about that too. Cause that's, I don't know about you, but like as a kid, I always got that, like, you don't smile enough kind of thing. Like, uh-huh. why don't you smile more? That sort of thing from teachers and stuff. And I know that that's, even worse for women. Like, it's such mm-hmm. a gendered thing. Like, oh, you should smile more, you know?
Yeah.
So I imagine that this probably plays into the angloplasty.
Yeah. So with the 20 and 30 year olds, you're talking about people with naturally downturned mouth corners.
Mm.
And they're essentially just getting things perked up a little bit. But also this surgery has applications for aging people where you have downturned corners of the mouth and sort of downturned lines in general due to just facial aging.
Mm. And so one of the things that I read, I think it was a Wall Street Journal blog post about this kind of surgery. They stated that this has actually been around for over 50 years in medical circles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done here in the West, but apparently very few plastic surgeons over here perform it anymore.
Yeah.
So that's curious to me. I wonder, why not? I wonder what it is about Korean culture versus, you know, Western culture that makes it acceptable or not acceptable.
Hmm. I'm sure we have listeners who are Korean yeah. or of Korean descent who might be able to give their own two cents.
Yeah, I would love to hear more about it. And, you know, maybe somebody out there's got one of these. I don't know. But I'm just curious about the whole thing. I have to say, like, I'm overall usually kind of dismissive of the idea of plastic surgery. But in this case, like, I could plastic surgery yeah. and the cosmetic application.
Well, no, this is an easy thing to fall in that line on because I feel like in our culture, plastic surgery is often just the go-to word for unnecessarily plastic surgery.
Yes, you're right.
But as we're discussing this episode, there's of course a large area of plastic surgery that deals with either, either correcting birth defects of yes. varying degrees or dealing with injuries of varying degrees. But again, plastic surgery in the headline sense, it seems like it always ends up referring to something that is purely, purely cosmetic. But anyway, the idea of this particular surgery, it's really interesting because on one hand, it's easy to look at it and say, well, hey, you're getting a fake smile. You're manipulating right. the natural facial expression of emotion. But the counter argument is that especially with age-related negative lines, like those are warping your natural facial expressions. Those mm-hmm. are messing with your ability to convey your emotions through and communicate through your facial communication array.
Yeah. And also how it's received too, right?
Yeah.
Like, so like we were talking earlier before the break about how people see smiles and perceive them and, the kind of happiness that generates, or even like the kind of happiness that just smiling on its own generates. So, I'd be curious to see a study on Valentine angloplasty and the level of happiness amongst the people who have received it versus, I guess, you know, they would have to use like a control group of people who don't have it.
All right. So we've talked about smiles already, but of course that's not the only, aspect of Jeff the Killer here,
right?
That,
so
it raises our interest.
The story goes that in order to, I guess, see how lovely his face is all the time, he burns off or cuts off his eyelids,
mm-hmm.
And that's not something that you normally see people do to themselves. However, there are lots of occasions in which eyelids either need to be replaced or fixed through surgery. This is a good example of what we were just talking about with corrective surgery. Or people have been in like really horrible accidents and need to have grafts put on because eyelids are an important thing.
Yeah. I have to admit that this is an area that's fascinated me ever since I read Larry McMurtry's novel Comanche Moon.
Oh, so this is, I'm not familiar with this.
All right. Well, it's in the same series, the Lonesome Dove series. So if you're familiar with those characters, like
vaguely,
they are in this book. It's like, I think it comes before. Yeah, it definitely comes before Lonesome Dove. But if you haven't read it, you've seen it at a bookstore and it just looks like a big, thick Western novel, right? But I have to tell you, this is a weird book in many respects. It features a lot of Comanche horse mysticism, and there's a whole lot of torture and flaying in it. In particular, there's an already weird Texas Ranger character named Captain Inish Skull.
Okay.
He winds up captured by a bandit warlord, and then his torturers, they busy themselves deciding just how much skin they're going to remove from their various captives.
Yeah.
And they finally decide, well, we're just going to take his eyelids.
Okay.
So they cut off his eyelids so he can't turn his head away from the horrors of the sun. But he eventually escapes in the book and he crafts a special set of glasses with a system of varying shades to click through in order to regulate the amount of light entering his eyes. So it's really almost a kind of crazy, almost steampunky notion.
That is not what I would expect from a Lonesome Dove book.
Yeah, it is a weird, great book. I tremendously enjoyed it.
Well, so eyelids themselves, though, they do more than filter light, right? So,
right. I mean, that is one of the important features, though, because, I mean, you can't squint. You can't, you can't adjust to the lighting. It's always just wide open all the time.
Huh. So I'm guessing, I guess what I'm trying to wrap my head around in both of these fictional examples is what that would do to the eyeball.
Well, it definitely plays into some of the other key reasons to have eyelids to begin with.
Mm.
Moistening the eyeball via blinking, spreading tears across the surface of the eyes, especially the moist cornea.
Okay. So like maybe his goggles need to like have a little bit of, I don't know, like a moisture trapped inside of them.
Like some sort of like little Clockwork Orange squeezies on the side.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is what Jeff would need in order to turn his life around. Also, your eyelids protect just stuff from getting in there, all sorts of debris that's going to blow around in the wind. And they help keep perspiration out of the eyes as well.
Okay.
So the key risk here is exposure keratopathy, which is excessive dryness due to revealed eye, especially during sleep. So, and this is interesting. We'll discuss, there are surgical methods to either replace eyelids or to correct eyelids either there's a birth defect or it's an aging related symptom. But without going into those surgeries, the best you could do is to apply a nightly dressing to the eyes.
Okay.
Like with using bubble patches or swim goggles even to ensure that the eyes stay moist.
Right. Yeah. So you gotta wonder about this Jeff the Killer myth then that like, he's already kind of a crazy serial killer who's done all this terrible stuff to his face, but he'd have like some real eye problems unless he like put some swim goggles on and dressed his eyes every night.
Yeah.
Or I guess every day because he's probably a serial killer at night.
Yeah,
whenever that's when he says go to sleep. Yeah.
Then of course, and I don't know if he would be more or less terrifying with swim goggles on. I can't In his case, though, if he wanted surgery, he's going to have, because there are surgical techniques that can be used to just correct minor situations of the eye. Yeah. You're not getting full coverage.
I saw lots of academic articles about different procedures and methodologies for that kind of reconstructive surgery. And then I think there's also like grafting that can be done from other parts of your body, right?
Right. Yeah. Now with Jeff or with Captain Skull here, nothing short of total upper and lower eyelid replacement is going to actually take care of things.
Whew.
And this is a complex surgical procedure and a series of procedures even. A 2002 paper on this titled Treatment of Bilateral Severe Eyelid Burns with Skin Grafts, an Odyssey, which should give you some idea of what we're dealing with here. In this case, 5 operations over the course of 5 years for the individual. And then there's a 2008 paper, Total and Upper Eyelid Replacement Following Thermal Burn Using an ALT Flap, a case report. This chronicles the use of free anterolateral thigh flaps, in the skin graft procedure.
So you're cutting bits off of your own thigh and then using those to graft in new eyelids.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, we're talking about a skin graft here and a rather detailed one as well. So yeah, it's not just as simple as just throwing some tissue back up over the eye. You have to hook it into the existing muscles. It's a complex procedure, but yeah. In the case of total eyelid loss, a necessity.
So as far as our Jeff the Killer loose thread that we're following here, the fake smile thing, yeah, there's some plausibility to that, but it would be more like a Glasgow grin, I think, than like the Valentine angloplasty that we were just talking about, unless right. he's really skilled with whatever blade he was using in his parents' bathroom. And then as far as this eyelid thing goes, I mean, it sounds to me like you wouldn't get very far or very long without eyelids unless like you had, unless you're constantly,
care, yeah.
yeah, you're constantly treating it yourself. I don't even know if the goggles would cut it.
Yeah. Now, at this point, we're going to get into a little darker, realistic territory. But I think it's important because with Jeff the Killer, we're essentially talking about, oh, this, an individual that's scarred by fire or acid, and this makes them horrible somehow. This makes them a monster, which of course is a ridiculous notion. But we have this idea just throughout our horror culture, especially like you have just all of these burnt, creatures, you know, they're
Freddy
mutilated.
Krueger.
Yeah. And then they're awful and they're less human because of it, which is completely ridiculous.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So it's really essential to, I think, to take that, that cultural trope and then actually discuss, some rather yet depressing, facts about real life mutilation attacks that continue to take place around the world.
Yeah, I have to say, like I we talked about this a little at the top, but I was shocked at how prevalent mm-hmm. this is. But I'm glad that there's a lot of research being done on it. In particular, there were two sources that we looked to here. One was a really great BBC magazine article that was just sort of about the general cultural problem of what are called acid attacks.
Right.
And then we also looked at a thesis paper out of the University of North Carolina by a woman named Jane Welsh, and it's called It Was Like Burning in Hell, A Comparative Exploration of Acid Attack Violence. And she looks at the whole gamut of acid attacks in like the last, I think it's like 30 years that this has become fairly prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And really kind of breaks down the statistics and what can be done and what should be done about them. So let's start with how prevalent they actually are. Okay. Acid attacks skew heavily, as you would imagine, toward women and girls. 75 to 80% of them are done to women. 30% of those women are under the age of 18. You may have heard about it recently. It happened in Zanzibar to two women who were tourists there. There's been a couple of incidents in which there have been Western tourists in other countries where this is more acceptable, and you know, somehow or another, it's they've offended someone, and therefore, like an acid attack is perpetrated against them. And these poor people, you know, have to go back and have surgeries to correct this. There's a lot of literature on the surgeries themselves for this as well. So this is some of the numbers that I was able to accumulate for this. Just in England alone, which is not one of the major countries that you read about when you hear about these acid attacks, mm-hmm. Between 2011 and 2012, there were 105 hospital admissions for what were referred to there as assault by corrosive substances. So that covers more than acid, but it's the same premise essentially. Every year there are more than 1,500 cases recorded. So those are recorded ones. Those are the ones that are reported. There's an organization that tracks this called Acid Survivors Trust International. India has an increasing problem with this. The group that tracks that says that 1,000 of the incidents take place in India every year. They're disproportionately common in South Asia, India, as I just mentioned. They are also suspected to have very high numbers in Afghanistan, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Cambodia.
Yeah, and so like many of the, you know, every case is a little different, but in a lot of the ones I've heard, it entails you know, a male propositions a woman or tries to initiate some sort of sexual or romantic relationship with them. They are rejected, and then their response is, "I'm going to
deface you.
I'm going to try to ruin you by assaulting you with acid."
Yeah, and so I don't know the details specifically on those Western tourists, but I suspect that was probably the case. It's worth deeper diving. And like we said at the top, we didn't want to do a full episode on this, mm-hmm. but we do think that it bears covering. Yeah, it's about destroying someone's identity at the end of it, right? Like that is the real aggression here. And strangely, I guess that's kind of what Jeff the Killer is about, you know, if you can like do some sort of thematic analysis of a creepypasta like that.
Yeah. If you do a far more serious read of the pasta than it deserves.
The character Jeff starts off as just kind of a junior high kid, like everyday American kid, who deals with like incessant bullying and his brother getting thrown in jail. And then he's assaulted terribly. And literally changes his identity, right? Makes him go crazy.
Well, I mean, really, there are two main obstacles here. I mean, one is just the cultural challenge of keeping this from happening, to just you know, push this back into the past. But on the other hand, too, it's about the victims as well. How there various programs and outreach programs that are aimed at helping these women reclaim their lives.
Yeah,
you know, and help them feel like. In a way, keeping their attackers from winning, keeping their attackers from achieving this warped sense of victory that they set out to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause it's more than just about like the physical surgeries involved too, right? It's about the like, psychological consequences of losing your identity as such as it is. I don't think that a lot of these attackers articulate it that way, but that's essentially what's going on here.
Yeah, the BBC piece that I was listening to, which dealt with a cafe that allows a place for these women to work and also has support network for them. Like they mentioned that in some of these cases, the victim can no longer turn to their family because there's like this level of shame that is that is applied to her, to their plight, that they no longer have a home because this person assaulted them.
Yeah, and I think that is largely cultural from the areas that these are committed in too, right? Like I'd like to think, I don't know, maybe it's not the case, but I'd like to think in our culture, at least here in America, in the How Stuff Works studio, that you know, like that wouldn't happen.
Well, but that's one of the things, right? Is so much of us live with the privilege of not having to know.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
we
true.
can think, we can't help but think what would happen if this happened in my community, if this happened in my family, how would one respond? How does one react? And you know, luckily most of us don't have to know.
Well, Jane Welsh's thesis, she really does a great job of breaking it down, and it's much longer. I mean, I'm just going to summarize a few facts here, but she found that, this started somewhere around the 1960s. So I was off when I said 30 years. It's thought to have started in Cambodia, as the earliest case of this kind of violence. And since that time, it's become an epidemic there. In the late 90s through 2005, acid was a favored weapon of choice for women and men looking to disfigure their rivals and settle scores. And so some of the activists that are involved in this, they say that at least 60 people were attacked in 1 year alone. Well, that's in the 90s. You know, we just read the stats for now, and it's in 1,000.
Yeah.
And that it's both men and women who are doing the attacking, but, you know, more women are being attacked.
Okay.
And the reasons are listed as sexual jealousy, extramarital affairs, land or business disputes, domestic violence, personal or family disputes, robbery, or hate and revenge.
Yeah.
And then it's usually a premeditated act that involves sulfuric, nitric, or hydrochloric acid thrown at another person. So, you know, I don't know that there's like much deeper that we can go than that other than, you know, if those of you out there want to hear more on this, we could maybe do a future episode where we dig deep into the science of the surgeries involved. But it, honestly, like I read a few of those getting ready for this episode and it was pretty deep diving. Like I think it was dense medical material that I didn't necessarily understand.
Yeah. I think probably the best we can do is we'll make sure that the landing page for this episode will include links out to some of the sources here, as well as some organizations that are involved, some advocacy organizations. A positive BBC story that I heard that I alluded to already about the cafe, the title of that is The Cafe Helping to Support Acid Attack Victims in India. I believe it's a video piece, though I think I heard it on the radio initially. That's worth checking out because it highlights not only the problem, but also, what's some of the efforts that are underway to help the victims.
So, all right, let's like wrap this up, and try not to end it on like a super bummer note with the acid attacks thing. Mm-hmm. But as such as like, let's go back and look at the Jeff the Killer, I guess, myth and the realities involved, right? Right. So acid attacks, yes, that's a thing. Unfortunately, more of a thing than we'd like it to be. So sure, a kid named Jeff could have been attacked in such a way. His face would have been burned away and he would be able to go back to his home. From what I was reading, there were no acid attack victims, though, that go crazy and cut their mouths and cut their eyelids off.
Yeah, that is purely a fictional thing.
Yeah. The eyelid reconstructive surgery. Yes, that you can reconstruct eyelids. I suppose you could cut your own eyelid off, but I don't know necessarily that you would be a very functional serial killer without eyelids.
Right.
And then when it comes down to the smile, wow, is there a lot of research on that? But you know, in the Jeff the Killer situation, I don't think he's doing like a cosmetic Valentine anguloplasty as much as like, you know, it's just kind of the Glasgow grin Joker kind of thing, Ichi the Killer type, you know, the generic, I guess it's become a generic trope now, geez, of like a sort of homicidal maniac who cuts themselves.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it. We stood up to the challenge. We took,
you asked for Jeff the Killer.
You asked for him. We gave it to you. Yeah. We explored some very fascinating science and cultural, information, that it, like I say, doesn't necessarily underlie that. It's not like the author and authors of that original creepypasta were inspired by these things, but in a sense, Jeff is composed of all of these things. He's kind of like the cultural, the cultural sludge kind of comes together and forms a figure like this, in our myth making.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, I mean, I think that the science and psychology behind fake smiles certainly play into, at least the sort of general trope of this type of creepypasta.
All right. So, hey, if we were to do a third creepypasta episode, which one would you like for us to tackle? Which one would you like us to try and just dissect and dig some slivers of science out of?
Yeah, you know, you can tell us about, first of all, tell us about other creepypastas, even if they're not ones that you think we should cover. But, you know, ideally, we'd like to do them on the podcast. I was surprised at how many, listeners popped up and were like, yeah, check this one out and this one and this one. Like, I think, you know, even though you and I are big horror fans, that like, this is just an area of the medium or the genre, I suppose, that we're not highly familiar with.
Yeah.
So yeah, if there's stuff out there that we're missing, let us know about it. You can always get in touch with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. We're Blow the Mind on all of those. We do Periscope or Facebook Live on Fridays, Eastern Standard Time, around noon. And lately we've been kind of switching back and forth between those two things, but, you know, we'll let our audience know beforehand, on those platforms, hey, this is what we're doing today, before we jump on one or the other.
All right. If you want to get in touch with us via the old fashioned email, you can reach us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild.
conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.